very pleased to introduce Dr. Mario Rosso, who's from the University of Pisa and who's a visiting fellow here at OCHS. He's done work on ancient Sanskrit texts, particularly Atharva Veda, and he's interested in classification systems, particularly of animals. And today he's going to speak about animal classifications in the Atharva Veda, with the precise title, Human and Animal Worlds in the Atharva Veda, Rituals, Superstitions and Psychoses in Animals in Vedic Society.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Gary. So I'm going to give some examples of the relation between men and animals in the rituals in the Atharva Veda. And I'm going to talk about some strange, in a sense, animals like worms, ants, and eagle, and owl, and not the main animals like cow, horses, or elephants. In the Indian tradition, the Vedas are believed to be Shruti, that is, revealed scriptures inspired by God to the Rishi, or mystic divine seer. Originally, the Vedas were called the Trivedya, the threefold knowledge, composed by Rig Veda, Samaveda, and Yajurveda. The Atharva Veda was added later on as a fourth and important section of the Vedic corpus. This text, as we know today, has been preserved in two different editions, the Shaunakiya edition and the Paipalada or Kashmirian edition, very often different in some part. The present work is based on the Shaunakiya edition, the most complete and well-preserved one. The Atharva Veda strophes contain details and information on the practical life of the Indian population in Vedic times, its social and private conduct, agriculture, relationships, beliefs and superstitions. The purpose of this lecture is to show how the Vedic society in its part, family, government, individual, related to the animal world and used animals in many different as well as strange situations. If we examine the content of the Atharvanic hymns in which animals are described, we can face a composite imaginary, Manichaean, polarized on two fronts, a positive level expressed by visceral admiration for the physical qualities of the animal and its miraculous virtues, divine or apotropaic, and a negative level, highlighted not only by demonic or deadly descriptions, but also by the constant construction of spectral scenarios in which the feeling of fear is dominant. Everything in the relationship between men and animals was based on a dichotomous relation. The fauna could become valuable ally for human well-being, or it could join the forces of evil and even lend its own features or body to evil spirits, whose unique objective was the destruction of peace and body. If we consider birds like the eagle and the falcon, their positive effect on the Vedic minds is evident and undoubted. The Suparna Garutmat, later known as Garuda, Vahana, vehicle of Vishnu in classical Hinduism, was depicted like the destroyer of snakes, the annihilator of poisons, and, for instance, in Vaishnava tradition, to talk about the evolution of Garuda, of Suparna Garutmat, like Naranga, half man and half bird. Great eulogies have been dedicated to the beautiful eagle, the owner of the sky, the fire who devours the rays of Surya, the sun, and gives protection to human beings against the snake poison and poisonous plants, visha. Visha is the word for poison. The latter element, the destruction of any kind of poison, represents an innovation in the Vedic cult of eagle. In Atharva Veda book 6, for example, the poet says, "O poison, the first who destroyed you was the beautiful winged bird. You did not intoxicate it. You did not cause it terrible spasms. You became food for it." The poison here mentioned is not that of a snake. The scenario is a battlefield, and the poet refers to the arrow of an enemy whose point had been sprinkled with some unknown dangerous plant. So the Atharva Veda shows an evolution of the propitious figure of the eagle. At this stage, it is worshipped like the destroyer of every sort of poison. Its flight was perceived as a clear sign of divine blessing on the house and village, depicted the house as a real goddess, steady on its foundations, as an elephant on its forelegs. In the Atharva Veda, the eagle is also described in an unusual context, that is, love affair. The theme of Atharva Veda, Book 6, Hymn 8, is the conquest of a woman. The lover turns to the object of love and hopes to tie her forever. Describing the yoke of the heart, he says, "Like an eagle lifting up in the air, flaps wings on the ground, so I hit your senses, so you will fall in love with me and not run away from me." Same positive idea and treatment were devoted to the Shiena, the hawk. First, through the Rig Veda verses, this bird was considered the discoverer and the giver of the Soma to give to God Indra, by means of which he was able to destroy enemies and re-establish peace on earth. I quote just an example from Rig Veda, Book 10. "The Soma was the Soma that the hawk brought from distance, the drink that can run hundreds of wheels." It is interesting to note that into the Atharva Veda, this particular aspect of the hawk is still preserved, but not as the most important feature of this bird. In fact, as we can notice in Book 3 of the Atharva Veda, the hawk is invoked as in a completely different situation: the restoration of a king to his throne, usurped by the enemy. The priest offered sweet rice, darbha grass, and water to the gods with these words: "May the king Varuna invoke you from the water, Soma from the mountains, Indra call you back here to our people, be hawk and fly to this people. May a hawk requaint here from the distant land, he who must be called, who was expelled and is held in the land of another. Make the Ashwin an easy path to navigate." So the hawk enters here the political life of the community. This bird, thanks to its divine help to Indra, had become a model of strength, resolution, and bravery. Its positive effect is interestingly used also against a more subtle enemy, the Yakshma, the terrible tuberculosis, whose deadly effects are well described in the Atharva Veda. In Book 5, in the Hymn 30, the poet is invoking protection from this disease. And he says, he who unleashes the rheumatism, which triggers fever, which brings the heartache, the Yakshma has fled far away like a hawk, overwhelmed by my words. The Shiena is here used, the Shiena is the hawk, as an example of speed and distance, a propitious model able to destroy the evil. By contrast, the accidental entry of a pigeon, the capota, in the house could affect the order of the family, since it was thought to be the announcement of an impending death. This bird, in fact, was considered one of the most negative and unlucky animals, symbol of Yama, messenger of death and destruction. We find evidences of this in the Rig Veda as well as in the Atharva Veda. If a pigeon entered the house, and even worse, the sacred place of Agni, the domestic fire, a great disaster would affect the family and the village. Let me quote some verses on the terrible capota. In Book 6, we can read, "O gods, the capota, sent as a messenger of doom, has fallen here, looking for something. Therefore, intone prayers and practice penance. Be gracious to our bipeds and our quadrupeds. May the armed wings bird not hurt us. It took place in our house, in front of the receptacle of fire. O gods, may the capota here not hurt us, and be gracious to our cattle and our men." The fear was absolute. The god Yama, king of death, was the master of the capota, as we can read in another hymn of the sixth book of the Atharva Veda. Here the dedication is to a group of amulets used against death. "Cast out with decisions the capotas with ch," the sacred strophes, "satiated with food, drive a cow, erasing the traces of ill omen, may they fly away and leave us our strength. They have unleashed the fire, they turned the cow, they have earned the glory of the gods. Who would dare move against them? The one who first reached the height of heaven and showed the way to many, he is the lord of bipeds, quadrupeds, be honored to him, Yama, to death." An interesting quotation of the capota is in the Paipalada edition of the Atharva Veda. This unique example introduces a new valuable characteristic of such a dangerous bird. I will cast you out with force, Capota. I throw you out with the evil spirit, and we will send you there where you never go back. The verse, bare and simple, introduces a further demonic element, the Rakshas, the demon, evil seen as a counterpart of the pigeon, perhaps an Asura with a pigeon shape. In the Atharvaveda, the Asura or the Rakshas are very often the shape of animals, like I will show you soon. The place that the poet stresses as that of non-return is, in all likelihood, the south, the kingdom of death, which is the undisputed kingdom of Yama. The Atharvaveda's poets seem to provide animals with positivity by means of a chain reaction. Being the elephant, a strong and stable animal, surely useful for the welfare of the village, pushed to attribute to this animal a great value of auspiciousness compared to that of the house, as I showed before. At the same time, considering the freshness one of the best remedy against fever or extreme differences in body temperature, did elevate the frog, already linked to the positive factor of the arrival of rains, as we can find in the Atharvaveda, many hymns where frogs are compared to Brahmans, and where the announcement of the rains, so the good season for agriculture. At the level of, linked to the positive factor of the arrival of the rains, at the level of who can lower the temperature and incorporate the excessive heat. The disease in which the use of manduka is highly recommended is the Takman, the dreaded fever, which was described like an aggressive and ferocious demon. As stated in Atharvaveda Book 5th, Takman belongs to a large family of malefic diseases, Balasa, tuberculosis, the Kasika, cough, and the Papman, scabies. The symptoms are well detailed, yellow color, very high temperature, and pain throughout the body. The lowering of the body temperature is a goal to be reached with a frog, as stated in the book 7th of the Atharvaveda. I pay homage to the fever that burns, that shakes, to the violent Takman. I pay tribute to cold, who fulfills its desire before everything. May that fever come in on alternate days, the one that occurs every 2 days, with no rules, be on this frog. So the fever has to go on the frog. In a theory of opposites, they must oppose to the burning fever something cold, refreshing, able to absorb the excessive heat. So the manduka was intended as a sort of talisman, a warrior fighting against the demonic forces that prostrate body. According to this custom, the frog was used as a substitute victim of the disease violence. The process of association of values almost involves the entire Vedic fauna, although for some categories of animals this practice results quite obvious. This is the case of the wolf, for instance, always in association with sheep and goats, the predator who kills flocks causing poverty in the house. Another example is the hustle against insects, from the description of which emerges a picture of calamity, difficulty, and negative consequences. If we read the Atharvaveda Samhita with the objective of outlining a psychological portrait of the Vedic society, the fear would occupy one of the first places of feelings and human obsession. The fear of the unknown, evil, oppression, disease, death, war, poverty, fear of not finding a love, of not having a descent in a long life, are just some of the negative thoughts that tormented the men of the time. Equally numerous were the sources that originated and sustained such a harvest of fear, with no distinction between enemies, either visible, tangible, invisible, or evil forces. The Vedic men felt threatened on several fronts. Numerous were the sources of danger, first of all, entities belonging to the earthly or heavenly macrocosm, such as human enemies, voracious and bloodthirsty demons. Nonetheless, there was a very wide range of beings and menaces confined in a microcosm, such as insects and small animals, but ruinous and very often invisible. If we read some cursing stanzas against apachit, small and annoying insects, which cause painful rashes and swelling in many parts of the body, we can discover how the population was afflicted by hygienic problems and the few means they had to avoid them. In Atharvaveda Book 6, for example, the victim of the apachit attacks presents hundreds of wounds on the skin in the area of the shoulders and neck. Those five, and those, I quote three verses, those five and those 50 bubbles that are found together in the neck area may all disappear from here as the hum of the apachit. Those seven and those 70 bubbles that are found together in the neck area may all disappear from here as the hum of the apachit. And then another. Those nine and those 90 bubbles that are found together in the shoulder area may all disappear from here as the hum of the apachit. When I say psychotic affection of the Vedic minds, I properly refer to the systematic presence throughout the stanzas of an obsessive hate and request of protection against some specific beings. Apachits are one of these obsessions. Let me now quote some verses that really show what I intend. This is from the book 6 of the Atharvaveda, the hymn 83. Fly away, O apachit, as an eagle from the nest. May the sun find a solution. May the moon chase you away with the light. An apachit is of various colors. One is white and two are black. I have grabbed the name of all. Disappear, do not damage men. The apachit, daughter of the black, the night, will fly away, no longer fertile. So then this bubble will fly away and disappear from neck. Present your offer and enjoy with your mind. Svaha, I offer the sacrifice with the mind. So against animals, they use practical remedies, but also vach, the word. The poet here defines the apachit, the daughter of the black. The absence of light, the obscurity of mind and space, were considered the favorite place of evil beings and enemies. We can read the description of apachits in the following verse from book 1. We learned that the mother of the reddish apachit is black. I pierce all of them with the roots of the divine sage. It is not clear what this divine sage could mean. Probably it refers to a mantra or to a magic plant used to destroy the negative effect of these insects. Other incredibly insidious and hated enemies who were hidden in the bowels of the human body and livestock were worms. Made of the same nature as the worst demonic presences, worms must be crushed and broken to ensure health and prosperity, especially to the human or animal body. However, not only the meat could be affected by the slow destruction wrought by this parasite, but also inanimate beings, such as mountains, water, or plants, essential to human life and human welfare. The purity of all that has been contaminated by the presence of krmi, or krimi, the Sanskrit word from worm, for worm. It can be affected and destroy any part of the body, for example, the head, the ribs, and the internal organs, causing a loss of their functionality. Such a dramatic scenario is prefigured in Atharvaveda Book 2, in which Indra is invoked like destructor and first element of a tribal team of worms annihilators, along with the fire and all the elements that give off heat. The light and fire, in fact, are two of the stronger arms for the destruction of this pest. And I quote Atharvaveda Book 2. As grains, I crushed the worms with a grinding wheel, the great wheel of Indra that crushes all the worms. I crushed that worm who is seen and what is not seen, and I have crushed Kururu. There's a group of nouns here, name of worms, that are completely not understandable from a point of view of the etymology and origin. So this Kururu is a sort of worm, and we don't know anything yet. Annihilate with the words of all worms, Algandu and Shaluna are the two. I crushed the Algandu with this great destructive weapon. Powerless were made worms by fire, and those not destroyed by the fire. I am setting free from all worms also those who have escaped the spell, so that no worm can survive. With the word, we annihilate all the worms, the drilling, the worm avascava, that who insinuates itself between the ribs, that invades the head and guts. I wiped out the entire race of worms, those in the mountains, in the woods, herbs, animals, water, and those who have taken possession of our body. This poem, first of the group dedicated to the destruction of worms, contains all the elements of this section against worms and insects. We can surprisingly find a very large lexicon of war. In four stanzas, in fact, the poets used every expression, every word that might make it more effective against the threat of the enemy. Against worms, he resorts the actions expressed by verbal roots as pish, destroy, crush, jab, or jump, destroy, tr, crush, han, kill, hit. The physical remedies like plants, fire, heat, and light have a non-physical counterpart, an invincible weapon, vach. Although they live hidden in the most inaccessible parts of the body, the worms are never safe because the power of spells and curses can find them at every pore. The god Indra, merciless and with an unparalleled strength, gives a further contribution to the expulsion of the parasites. In fact, he destroys worms, grinding them as cereals in the wheel. Worms are believed to have a social system and a social hierarchy, different colors, different names, a king and a prime minister, and so on. We can read in book 2. The king of worms has been killed their leader, was destroyed the worms whose mother was killed, whose brother was killed, whose sisters were killed. Apparently there's no father, I don't know, but just mother, brother, and sister. Let me conclude this terrific section on insects and worms in particular with one of the most stunning examples of the Atharvanic stanzas, rich in metaphors and visionary meaning. This is from the book 5th of the Atharva Veda. We crush the worms that crawls in between teeth, that moves in the eyes, and that crawls in the nose. The worms who, with two shades, have been killed those of two different colors, that the two black and two red were killed. Destroyed were the brown ones with brown ears, the vulture and the cuckoo-shaped. We destroyed the worms with white shoulders, those black with white arms, and those of many colors. He who hits the invisible enemy, who is seen by all, the sun, is rising in the east. He smashes all the worms and kills those seen and those unseen. Be the Yevasha destroyed, the Kaskasa, the Ejatka, the Shivapitnuka, and destroyed the worm seen what is not seen. I have broken the ribs of the worm with three heads, with three humps, spotted and white, and then shatter its head. I mash with a stone the head of all the male and female worms, and I burn their mouths with fire. If we analyze the vocabulary of the Atharva Veda, there is the evidence of a well-established society with a no longer nomadic economy, but built on a strong herding and agriculture. First of all, this is confirmed by a distinction between the vocabulary of either domestic or tamed animals, pashu, and the wild and dangerous world, enclosed in Murga. In the Vedic tradition, the group of pashu was composed of five elements, men, cattle, horses, goats, and sheep, while Murga, of all those, excluded by the other category. Later on, other animals were added to the five representatives of pashu, especially camels and donkeys. The main peculiarities of Murga, the savage part of the animals, were the danger, unpredictability, not being suitable as sacrificial material, and their tight bond with the darkness. It has been pointed out, darkness and the absence of pure positivity infused by the sunlight constitute a clear threat and danger for the human beings. For the darkness covers the battlefield, which is the kingdom of vultures and other scavengers like the jackal, the crow, and the flies. And there are many hymns in the Atharva Veda describing these animals like jackal, crow, flies, and vultures. The terror of decomposition, of death, and the destruction of the flesh vividly emerges from the hymns. The end of the war is represented in all its cruelty, with detailed descriptions of blood and smell of death, with invocation and curses on enemies in the triumphant lexicon of war. It lays its foundation on the concept of the breaking of the bones, joints, the smashing of heads, and destruction. Surprisingly, we can also find descriptions of demons with features of eagle and resembling sheep with a double row of, of teeth. Devouring the offspring of a Brahmin, Brahman, guilty of wanting to excel on his peers. Even the most auspicious animal, then, can hide a dark side in perfect harmony with the usual image of Vedic and then Hindu deity, always with a positive and at the same time negative aspect. For example, in Atharvaveda book 5th, shows an example of what happened to a Brahmin guilty of wishing to overcome the Brahmin, the Brahmins of his own caste, and the tragic events that occurred to those who offended or flattered the powerful priests. And I quote a verse. To those people who drove away the Brahmin Barhatsaman, an Angirasa, a ram with teeth on both jaws and a sheep devoured the offspring. There are, in addition to many scenes of fear, less dramatic descriptions of feelings, such as love. Far from being able to establish some kind of romance by the Vedic poets, we can read lovely descriptions of feelings and relationships between men and women, unfortunately few if compared to the abundance of references to the mere sexual power, jealousy, reproduction, and separation. In one case, for example, the description of the pair of Chakravaka seems to anticipate the tones of the classical poetry of Kavya. There is a veiled eroticism, in fact, in Atharvaveda book 14th, where a man and a woman are invited to join and live together forever, surrounded by their offspring, as a pair of Chakravaka, is a kind of duck, the Chakravaka. And the poet says, O Indra, come here and do urge these two, men and women, to join as a pair of Chakravaka. May they get a full life along with their offspring and surrounded by a beautiful house. And there are also other verses. In the majority of cases where humans are struggling with relationships, references to the animal world are always very concrete and carnal. Some animals, in fact, become a model of sexual power, paradigms of a feral force that a man has lost or of which he was deprived. So there are verses in which the victim of a curse on the genitals hopes for a recovery of the lost functions, perhaps enhanced on the model of a donkey or an elephant. Thanks to the study of the relationship between the human and the animal world, we may also establish a range of values and influences from the indigenous Indian populations on the Vedic conquerors. Often folk beliefs and the primordial cults ascribed to the local substrate have emerged and exploded within classical Hinduism. This is the case of the veneration of ants and termites, considered as a sacred animal and place to pay homage to during the wedding ceremonies in order to promote fertility and wellness. In the Atharvaveda, ants were worshipped more or less in the same field, the promotion of human health and against diseases and epidemics. I quote a verse from book 2 of the Atharvaveda on ants. The ants carry the remedy out of the sea. This is the remedy for bleeding, which has destroyed the disease. The propitious contributes of ants against poison and disease is also referred to in this stanza from book 6. O ants, destroy the poison with that water that the gods gave you from the dried ground. Destroy it with this water produced by the gods. Same was the these two stanzas are very obscure. Maybe the poet is talking about some old story about the recovering of water from by the ants, but I don't know if some of you know some myths, but it's really obscure, this part. Same was the veneration of elephant, whose cult seems only to be alluded to in the Vedic hymns, but extraordinarily consolidated in the subsequent period up to the present day. it is less easy to arrive at a conclusion on the development of beliefs such as one that recognizes the swans and the geese the ability to separate milk from water. If we turn our attention to the most solemn part of the Vedic ritual in connection with the animals, the Atharva Veda confirms a new ritualistic as well as linguistic change. The Rigvedic sacrifice, the sacrifice of animals like goats, horses, rams and cows, becomes a secondary in the Atharva Veda in favor of vegetable offers, first of all the odana dish consisting of rice and milk. Even if we meet the offer of living beings, such as the Aja, the goat, there are very, very large hymns about the sacrifice of goat in the Atharva Veda, it is always accompanied by a plate of rice, rising to the rank of best sacrificial material, the most pleasing to the gods. Even with these considerations, it is therefore possible to trace a path of the Vedic sacrifice from its origins until the post-Vedic period. The main stages may be laid down in three in number: traces of human sacrifices witnessed by the dismemberment of primordia Purusha, run to the immolation of animals such as horses, the Ashvamedha, the bull, goat and ram, until a partial elimination of the animal elements in favor of offerings with cereals, butter, ghee or gurta, milk or other vegetables. Again, this is an important antecedent of what is in Hinduism the presentation of the puja to the gods, consisting of flowers, sweets, fruit and rice. I think we can trace the development from the Vedic, from the Rig Veda, where the sacrifice were mainly animals, to the Rig Veda, where they sacrifice animals and vegetable things, to the complete vegetarian offering. Can we establish a hierarchy of favorite animals within the Vedic society? This question can be answered from two different points of view. There is no doubt that the most fascinating animal category of this period was that of birds. Perhaps, like every human being of every age and time in history, the magic of flying, the dream of being able to soar in the sky like an eagle or other birds, was extremely dreamt and desired. Nonetheless, a huge number of birds shared the negative meanings: vulture, pigeon, crow, owl, especially those who eat meat and or have a mournful verse. The second way of attributing importance to animals is the possibility of a practical advantage. Most prominent was, of course, the domestic fauna, primarily cattle, horses, sheep and goats, with some exceptions, however, in the realm of wild murga. So, as I said before, the murga was considered like negative, not suitable for sacrificial offering, but there's an exception, and this exception is the Krishna, the black antelope. By the way, it is worth mentioning the case of the Krishna. There is the black antelope, whose skin was an integral part of the outfit of a Brahman ritual. Every Brahman priest used to sit on a black antelope skin before starting his ritual duties. It is interesting to read a story about the holiness of this animal. It is presented within the Shatapatha Brahmana, Book 1. And this is the quotation from the Shatapatha Brahmana. Once the sacrifice fled from the gods and became a wandering black antelope. The gods, after having found it and by having snatched away the skin, took it with them. Its black and white hair are the Ch and the Saman. There is the Saman, the white one, and the Chi, the black one. Or, on the contrary, the Saman, the black, and the Chi, the white. Instead, those brown and yellow hair represent the Yajur. So every part of this skin, the different colors of the black antelope, were considered like part of the Vedic group of texts. Often a positive quality was associated to the animal that evoked the light, bright colors, bright shades of golds. Perhaps this, the case of the black antelope is an exception, as they were by far favorite bright colors, such as white of Hamsa, the golden hues of the hawk, the green and the mottled colors of the frog. However, this framework has many exceptions. to conclude, the Vedic nature and its two major components, flora and fauna, represented an inexhaustible source of physical and psychological well-being. Nonetheless, their fickleness, supposed to be able to implement any subterfuge or evil against man, stimulated the most irrational part of the human psyche, releasing a constant sense of danger. This perpetual fear, palpable in the words of poets, suggests that, overall, the relationship of man with wide fields of nature was not serene. And, in the same way, also the coexistence between animal and, man and animal was often very difficult. Thank you.
Thank you, Mario, for taking us through this world of just this morning I was hearing on the radio that we're only ever a couple of feet away from an insect, apparently. There's so many of them, but we're not aware of them. And I was interested in the way that the Krimi society reflected the human society.
Yeah.
And yet they felt threatened by it, presumably, so they wouldn't.
Yeah, maybe because it was like a description of the society of enemies, of the village. Maybe the destructor of the village they were fighting.
Mm.
Maybe this.
The other thing that struck me was the imprecision of the terminology. This is not a taxonomy,
yes.
Is it?
Yeah. They use quite all the Sanskrit root for something that inspire battle and war. So hit, jump, every root has a position in the Atharva Veda.
Okay.
In this,
but
in
I mean,
this
you wouldn't be able to tell the difference between, say, a mosquito and a fly.
No.
In this kind of scheme.
There are too many words that are really.
Oh, okay.
Not clear from a linguistic point of view. Maybe some scholar says it's a question of substrate, not probably Sanskrit or Vedic origin or Indo-European origin, but maybe Dravidian origin or Munda origin.
I was wondering why you go so far as to call it a psychotic fear. Rather than an understandable one.
Yes, it was maybe an extreme.
Okay.
It was provocative, but because if you read the Atharva Veda from the first hymn to the last, you really get too many. Yeah, it's like a continuous sense of fear and oppression when you read every part of the of this. Not only in the sense of in the field of animals or other. But I don't know. For example, the scenarios of battlefield are terrible, cruel, full of decomposition and blood. Maybe I remember in the Sangam text the battlefield where the soldiers used to cook the body of the enemies. It's yeah. And the goddess Kotrave was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why did they do that either? Okay.
So it's a very usual in Indian, in every Indian text from Tamil tradition or the Sanskrit or Vedic tradition to describe in such a terrible words and atmosphere the war and the negative aspects of life. So maybe, yes, it's an extreme, choice.
Have you encountered a semi-mythical animal? I think it was mentioned in the Mahabharata, but it was also found in the Shrauta Sutras. Indeed, I think Gavin and I read a passage on the Purusha Meter about it, called a Kim Purusha.
A Kim Purusha, yeah.
Yeah, have they mentioned in the Atharva Veda?
Maybe in the Rig Veda,
but I
can't remember in this moment. But I think the Kim Purusha is present also in the Rig Veda. It's like a kind of man, a kind of human being. Yeah.
Literally a watchman.
What man? Yes. Kim Purusha. Yeah.
Could it be a monkey?
Yeah, in the Rig Veda there's an interesting hymn. On it's a dialogical hymn between Indra and Vrikshapati. There's a monkey, probably, And Indra, scholar says this is the proof that the cult of Indra was like going to end, because Indra is like the loser, and Vrikshapati has Indrani, has an intercourse with Indrani, and this Vrikshapa was really proud of him, because he had a relation with the wife of the king of the gods. So maybe the monkey or some can be there. Actually, we don't have a clear proof of the presence of monkeys in the Theravada.
I think they're in the Pali canon, not if I remember the Naya
Pitaka. So are there no descriptions of of animals? I mean, in the text, are there actual descriptions of the animals, or are they only in terms of the qualities, except for the black antelope?
You mean clear physical descriptions?
Yeah,
of,
except for the black antelope. Which
there's also the black sheep, and there was a
but
negative.
But all these worms.
No, they are described like a monstrous. With a monstrous aspect, like three heads, or I don't know, many colors. But you mean a precise description?
Yeah.
No.
So it's very interesting. Why not? Why do they not just give you descriptions of? Or rather, I should ask the question: why do they give you these very monstrous descriptions?
Well, I was going to say, if they're present in your body, like they were in the nose and
the nose,
quite monstrous.
Yeah.
It's kind of understandable fear, right, almost,
but
that you're going to depict
it's interesting because they believed that worms were affecting also the mountains, waters, herbs, every part. They were really terrified with these animals.
And like in terms of the mosquito thing, I mean, I've been in India at certain times of the year where you're trying to sleep and literally, and really it's a battle almost. You feel like you want to kill every single mosquito that you smash them and break them. At least that's, maybe it's a psychotic thing.
Yes. No, because when they mention mosquitoes, like, I don't know if mosquitoes is the correct translation of Apache. It was an insect, very small, they say in the text. They mentioned this because they were acting like a black magic against. They invoked the 9 and 19, the 7 and 70, the 5 and 50. So it was like a spell or a black magic against this. And also white magic. Like the recovering of the sexual powers are really funny because they mentioned animals like a donkey or elephant. This is the reason why Orthodox Brahmins don't accept Atharvaveda in the number of the Trivedya, because of this part of the text that are considered like not as divine as the strophes of the Rig Veda.
Is there any notion of like reaction from kind of like cursing these getting all these things killed or something? There's any sense of is karma, the notion of karma, present at that time in that's a much later thing, is it?
It's
like
later
this,
from
the
Upanishad.
Yeah.
Yes, from the Upanishad.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I think the Atharvaveda is The date of the Atharvaveda, they consider the Atharvaveda maybe later than the Rig Veda, but I think in some part is older than maybe some original part of the Rig Veda or Kohiv, because they really show old groups of beliefs and superstitions that then completely disappeared maybe from the Upanishad and so on.
So So when you say older, you mean it's almost, I don't know the genealogy, but like non-Vedic origin almost? There's like.
I don't know if Tristan agrees with me. I think many parts of the Atharvaveda are from a non-Vedic or Indo-European extraction.
Okay.
Understandable if you compare it with the Tamil world, or the Munda also, a very interesting, not very known world in India, the Munda and the tribal tradition. I think the Atharvaveda is a product of absorbing many traditions. The Rig Veda was created outside and then imported to India with the first arrivals.
Mm.
But the Atharvaveda is something that join this part, the Rig Veda and the sacred part, and the pre-existent Indian world, I think, but I can't say the truth.
And an attempt to sort of Brahminicize it, appropriate it. And
yes, because the aims of Atharvaveda were only the Brahmins priests were allowed to recite or to use for spells.
I didn't know much about it, but scholars like Bronkhorst have suggested that Malgata might, in the extreme east of India, might be a sort of alternative centre of the culture.
Mm-hmm.
But whether that is connected with Atharvaveda is another question.
I mean, there are very practical evidences. In the Rig Veda you simply don't find some animals, so they don't know. They at the time was not known. Then in the Atharvaveda you find maybe the elephant, or if we agree with someone, the monkey. But so it's an evolution, and the text reflects this evolution, this widespreading of the Vedic society.
There's no elephant in the Rig Veda?
At least in the Rig Veda, no.
Oh.
No. Or not clear. Because some animals are not distinct. You can't distinguish.
Mm.
Yeah. For example, the buffalo sometimes is considered a camel, so because the word is not clear. No? It can be the camel or can be the buffalo. Thank you.
Thank you
very
much.
I hope you won't dream this. you won't have nightmares tonight.
Psychotic nightmares.
Psychotic nightmares.